What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back, Redheads. Another episode of the Redheads Book Club in the queue. We are just firing in all cylinders here. I'm so excited to see you guys. How's everyone doing? I will start with Dana because she is going to be the leading expert of today's episode. Dana, how are you?
I'm great. I would like to announce that I am going to shave my legs this week. So that's the big development in my life. And otherwise, just a normal day in the queue.
Wow.
Okay, so what's the plan for shaving your legs? Like, is this going to be sponsored by someone? Billy Razors, maybe?
Oh my God, I wish I had the forethought to, like, get some sponsors involved. No, my only interesting fact is that I may use Nair. I haven't bought it yet. I've been toying with the idea. I haven't used Nair since, like, fifth grade when I was first allowed to use it and not use a razor. But I don't know. Any thoughts on Nairing my legs instead of shaving?
Dana, I don't even know if Nair's gonna work. You need to, like, give them an acid.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's like Nair barely works when your legs are, like, a normal amount of hairy. So why are we going to Nair when it's, like, industrial amounts of hair?
I don't know. Just something about a normal razor shave feels like it won't work. So I was looking for alternatives.
Yeah. And you're gonna
why don't you just try?
But you're also gonna have to clean the shit out of, like, your bath or shower after you shave. Like, when I shaved, it lined my tub with my hair, and yours is much worse.
Yeah, like, Nair, I can do, like, sleepaway camp style, like, get a bucket, like, get water and a towel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You need to do it, like, outside the bunk on the porch and just throw the hair in the trash, or you could maybe donate it at this point.
You can maybe knit a sweater for the imminent winter.
Well, glad to see that you're doing well. I hope your brain is on, you know, full capacity because it's going to be working OT today. Snatchler, how are you?
I'm good. I cried like 2 times today, so it's lower than normal.
Wow. What's going on?
Nothing. I just hate the fucking quarantine, okay?
Yeah, I understand. But you're happy to be here with the Redheads Book Club, right?
Yeah, of course.
There's nowhere else you'd want to be.
There's nowhere else I could be.
There's nowhere else you can go. Yeah. Bex, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing as well as can be. I've been doing a lot of cooking, which I feel like has been entertaining in my quarantine house. I'm the worst cook, we've all learned, which is, like, unfortunate. Here I was thinking I was great, but, like, slowly and surely it's been revealed that it's not what we thought. But, you know, you can't steer passion away. I still love a good foray in the kitchen.
Well, at least, you know, it's something to do. It can't be that bad.
It's really not that bad. It's just, like, everyone else has been making better meals than me.
Yeah, and your boyfriend is a really good cook. So when you're compared to him, like, of course it's not, you know, Michelin star, but at least it's edible.
Yeah, that's true. I guess this is all an exercise in feeling fortunate for what I have.
Very true. Well, I'm fortunate for the Redheads. This book, The Glass Hotel by Emily St. James Mandel, I think it's our most polarizing book yet, because before I got into it, before I started it, I was seeing some comments and some notes in our Facebook group about how this book was so confusing and people couldn't figure it out or keep up with it. So I was obviously so nervous. So I started it a little bit earlier than usual. I started it on a Sunday and I got through it in one day and I really enjoyed it. I understood obviously where people were coming from with their confusion, but I personally enjoyed it. So I kind of just want to go around and hear from all of you what your first impressions were from the book and ultimately where you landed. Dana, once again, we will start with you.
I loved it. I thought it was a literary masterpiece. It was exactly what I needed after the past two rom-coms. Not that I didn't love them, Snitch, but it just like brought me back into my comfort zone. I love the way it was written. I love like the network of coincidences. I love the acute observation of the human development. I just loved everything. And like, I agree, it was confusing, but it forced you to think. Like, you had to pay attention, which I haven't had in a while. And yes, some might find that annoying because who wants to use their brain more than they need to? But it was also refreshing to just like put sequences together. It was like, I would describe it akin to doing a jigsaw puzzle. It's like you read a story and then six chapters later, you connect the dots with that original story with something that comes up. And I had fun with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Bex.
You know, it's so funny. It's like, I also made it akin to something, like this whole experience of reading this book. I likened it more so to fine art because I feel like I appreciated it and it was the closest thing. Like, I'm not necessarily someone who understands, like, the reasons why Monet's Water Lilies is, like, revered across artists and scholars and painters, etc. But... and, like, I don't really, like, understand the intricacies, like, from their perspective as artists, etc. But I can definitely appreciate the beauty and the complexity of it. And I feel like that was the same with this here novel. Like, I felt like there was deep meaning. And although I wasn't always following along with, like, every single detail of that meaning, I really liked that this book took it a layer deeper than where we've been.
Yes, that's the level that I'm on as well. I enjoyed it, like... similar to art, if I walk past it, like, very beautiful, I can appreciate it. I can't tell you why it's so beautiful or what makes it so special, but I appreciate the specialness, and I concur with that assessment. Now, I'm going to throw it to the Snitch, who's been making faces like she thinks we're crazy. The Snitch, what do you have to say?
Is everyone okay? Like, did we all read the same book? It was bad. Like, it was a bad book. You thought it was a literary masterpiece? There's 1,000 run-on sentences. Like, this book was just not it, guys. Like, it made no sense. I still can't tell you who half the characters are. I can't tell you what's real and what's not. And I understand that you have to suspend reality sometimes, but, like, I wasn't even sure if I was supposed to be suspending reality. Like, the whole book just was truly torture to get through.
Damn.
Tell us how you really
feel. She said what she said.
I said what I said. And I'm saying it for the people who will be listening and be like, are these people for real thinking that this book is a masterpiece?
No, we so appreciate your perspective, and I know that some people feel that way, so I think we're going to have a very lively conversation about the book. Now, I skipped ahead a little bit because usually I summarize the book that we've read for anyone who forgot it, didn't read it, or didn't understand it, like a lot of people. This book is a little harder to summarize because it's not your average boy meets girl
because
story.
Because it makes no and sense.
It's not chronological. It's very jumpy. I think that a lot of people would differ in terms of who they think the main character is. The main, like, it's funny, the character, I read this in some review that I read because I was just trying to understand people's thoughts on the book. The story, the characters wrap around the story, whereas usually it's the other way around. Like, but the thread of the story is the main character, you know, not Vincent necessarily or Alcatus. Anyways, it's a bunch of different people who are in each other's lives, in and out of each other's lives. We have the siblings, Vincent and Paul. They are half siblings, a lot of family resentment there, which we'll get to. They both work at the Glass Hotel, the name of the book. By the way, this hotel sounds like the place to be. I would give anything to be there right now. It sounds like a farm chemin dream to be outside of time and space, just like perched up at Jonathan Alcatus's hotel right now. They're both working at the hotel owned by Jonathan Alcatus, who we find out, I felt too early, that he is eventually a Ponzi schemer and he's going to die in jail. We'll get there. Anyway, at the hotel, one night there is a graffiti written on the glass of the wall that says something very disturbing. It says, "Why don't you swallow broken glass?" And it's kind of a mystery as to who wrote it. And this sort of sets off a chain of events we find out afterwards, where Vincent makes a big change in her life. She winds up dating and fake marrying, but just being a partner to Jonathan Alcatus. And she, you know, starts to live in, quote, the world of money. Paul loses his job and Leon is another guest at the hotel who sees it. He's wrapped up in the story. I thought his journey was really interesting as well. Then we roll on to 2008. There's the big financial crisis. Jonathan Alcatraz's Ponzi scheme comes to light. And we see how this affects all the different characters in the book. Vincent takes a job as a cook on a ship, which he works there for, I guess, about 16 years, something like that. Leon and his wife ditch that, like, they run out of money because he was a victim of the Ponzi scheme. And, I mean, there's all these different, it's impossible to summarize this book in one breath. Like, there are all these different paths, and, like, it's really a quilt of just woven stories of people whose lives overlapped with one another at certain points.
Well said.
That was great.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you. And, you know, at first I was like, why is it called the Glass Hotel? But that hotel is the one place where every person has been. You know, it's the one thing that really everyone is attached to the hotel at some point.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's what I got from it. So it was a very I feel like this story could have been told chronologically, you know, 2003, 2005, 2008, 2018. But the way that it was told, going back and forth, yes, it was confusing. Literally different paragraphs were from different people's point of views, and different days and different years. But sometimes when I don't understand something, I just keep reading because I know eventually I'll understand what it is. Like when they introduced us to that Olivia character, the old woman, the artist, I was like, excuse me. I was so confused, but I just figured if I kept reading, like eventually it will be explained to me.
For sure. But it shouldn't be that difficult. Like when you introduce a new character, like it shouldn't be so confusing. Like they could have at least, like, had Jonathan Alcatraz meet Olivia, and then we have Olivia. But all of a sudden, we have a new chapter, and Olivia's speaking, and I'm like, who?
Yeah, that seems to be a literary choice, and I'm going to defer to Dana to explain what might have been going on.
I think that's the whole point of the book, Snitch. Like, the past books that we've been reading, or just books in general that people tend to gravitate to, are very clean-cut in its structure, like beginning, thesis, three avenues of approach, climax, resolution, and it gets wrapped up in a nice bow. And obviously those sort of books are appealing because you can follow them easily and they have an actual story. But this writing structure wasn't meant, I think, to be confusing or turn off the reader. It was meant to do the opposite, where you had to just view the story in different ways. Like, I loved what you worded in the beginning, Jackie, how the story the characters wrapped around the story instead of the story around the characters. Like, you were forced to fluctuate between time zones, between characters, and that had the effect of kind of multiple different lives and multiple different stories in one book. And, like, I felt like I was reading 10 different books in one sitting. So it just achieves a different effect.
But you liked that? Like, you liked reading 10 different books in one sitting?
Yeah. Because it was complex. Like, you didn't have your run-of-the-mill, this happened, she works at a hotel, then she marries, then he goes to jail, then it's over. Like, you were forced to incorporate everybody else's story and what was going on in their lives at the same time and at different times, and it just added a different layer. It was more like the beauty of the experience of reading as opposed to the beauty of the story itself.
I get that, and I understand it was, like, supposed to be a whole story about how all these different worlds and people connected, but I think that it could have been done in a much better way.
I think we're really used to a pretty binary, straightforward way of reading books and taking on a novel and going paragraph by paragraph, chapter by chapter, and it just following kind of a literary course until we reach our finale. And I, like, to Dana's point, having all of these layers and, like, making it a sandwich of a book that we, like, go through all these layers at the same time simultaneously until we reach an end, which, like, isn't all that satisfying. It's definitely just, like, challenging to our norm. And therefore, we're not going to have the same satisfaction at the end of being like, okay, like, beginning, middle, end, we're good. So yeah. I just feel like it was different all around, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was bad. It was just a shift.
A shift.
This whole...
Can you work with that, Snitch?
Bye what? Week was a shift.
Can you work with a shift?
No, I like what I like.
That's fair, but that's what this book club is for. I wanted to start this book club so that we would all be reading different kinds of books. There are a lot of books out there that are super popular, that you kind of know what to expect, and I wanted to choose a book that just went sideways, and I think this book accomplished that and definitely was different from our last two books. I know people were getting a little bit tired of that trope, Rebecca specifically.
No, Snitch, so, I was this was me last time around. Like, I feel you, girl, and, like, welcome to being, like, the one who's angsty. Like, it's a wonderful place and person to be.
Okay, well, let's get into some themes. Today's episode will be a little different because I don't think that there's any length of podcast that would allow us to talk about everything that happened in this book. Like, there are so many things that I keep remembering. I feel like at times I don't even remember what happened. Like, someone will mention a thing that happened. I keep forgetting about Paul completely because on the one hand, he's the main character. On the other hand, he's irrelevant to the story.
Completely. Also, so when you said Leon, I literally had to text you. I was like, who the hell is Leon?
Yeah, Leon is very, very sad. There's all these different elements and interesting things that happened. So we're going to do our best to unpack as much of it as possible and share our thoughts along the way. So let's get into some of the main themes. I think a big theme in this book, considering it is centered around a Ponzi scheme, which in the acknowledgments, the author notes that the Ponzi scheme was modeled off of Bernie Madoff's 2008 Ponzi scheme. So a big theme is greed versus guilt. Now, greed is a theme here because Jonathan Alcatus is greedy and his guilt eventually, it's funny because he doesn't seem guilty in the way that we're introduced to him through Vincent. He seems like a man who's very, very sure of himself and like not in the middle of a major Ponzi scheme. And he's so charismatic. And I guess that's what allowed him to get to this place in his life. But what I found so interesting is that eventually when he goes to jail, like guilt puts you in a prison of its own, you
like
know?
Like Enrico.
Yes, yes, like Enrico. So Dana, what'd you think about greed versus guilt in the novel?
I thought greed was interesting. Well, one, it seemed like greed was primarily focused on money, and I know that's the main component of greed, but sometimes you see greed with like love or relationships or jealousy, but here it was the Ponzi scheme, very centered around making money. Paul's greed, he stole Vincent, his sister's videos and used it for his own monetary scheme and getting ahead in life. So that just like made me think about money a lot more. And as you mentioned, Jackie, the kingdom of money was described as its own separate place in the novel where you lived if you were rich. And those concepts the author played with a lot, one of which, and this was actually highlighted in the book, I usually hate the highlighted passages because I think they're corny, but this one stood out to me. It was a passage where Vincent's friend is describing how she doesn't even see the help anymore in her house. Like they're invisible to her and she's living in the kingdom of money. And Vincent has a saying where the only difference between being rich and poor isn't the money itself, but it's actually the awareness that you don't need to think about money anymore. So that stood out to me. It's not just like, oh, I can afford this. It's, oh, I don't need to think about whether I can afford it or not. So I think greed was like heavily intertwined with money. And then to counter it, the guilt that people felt from their greed was interesting, mostly in the fact that it kind of verged on the supernatural, that guilt to me manifest in ghosts. Like Jonathan's guilt in jail was he saw, I mean, you could argue they were actually ghosts, etc., but they also could just be a vehicle for his guilt. He was seeing them. Paul, when he was in the nightclub, he kept seeing Charlie Wu, who he killed. That was a ghost, kind of the first example of guilt manifesting that way. So I thought the interplay between those two were like very interesting.
I would agree with that. And one thing in particular, because I like definitely grasped onto the notion of Paul stealing Vincent's videos and like being greedy and taking them and kind of swiveling them into his art form and getting famous over it. But I felt like he was so bogged down with the fear slash guilt of her confronting him that it almost like took over him. Like the anxiety and the guilt of the fact that he had done this to his half-sister, it like took over. And therefore, like, I feel like he couldn't even enjoy or embrace the act of becoming a famous artist because he was so overcome by potentially being confronted by Vincent and being called out. And he like replayed it in his head endlessly.
Yeah, that passage really stuck out to me too when he was like, by not having this conversation with her that he's been dreading, he's fated to have it for the rest of his life. I feel like I'm in that position all the time where I have these conversations in my head with people where I'm like, I know exactly what I'm going to say and I do it over and over and over again. And every once in a while I wind up having that conversation, but for the most part I just have it in my head for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that ties into like a big theme in the book that we'll talk about, but the counter life and obsessing and fixating. I feel like every character was just constantly engaging in these fake lives where they were leading out different things and like on one hand, maybe it was another coping mechanism. Like, I'm stealing money from all these people, but, like, let me imagine if I did call the FBI right now. Like, Enrico had that thought when he was in the office. I mean, Jonathan in jail is obsessing over counter lives that don't exist. It was, and Vincent is, like, at one point talking about how she obsesses over what would happen if. And I feel like we've approached that in a lot of the books we read, like, especially in 5 years, just constantly rewriting the past, reimagining the future. I think that's just an interesting trope throughout literature and life, just obsessing over what could be. The butterfly effect.
Yeah,
always comes back to the butterfly effect.
Always.
I highlighted certain passages and I was like, Dana's gonna eat this up. This is so butterfly effect.
It was so butterfly effect. And just like one action changes the course of your life. And Jackie, like, I was equally confused why Paul was such a fringe character, but yet opened the book, but then appeared sparingly. And I feel like it's because when he did appear, it was an indicator to the reader that like something important is happening. Like, even though it was infrequent, he appeared in the beginning when he killed Charlie Wu, but then he went to visit Vincent and Melissa and they had New Year's Eve, and that was when he first saw a ghost. So like, okay, now we're aware ghosts exist. Then we next see him when he visits Vincent when her mom dies and he's supposed to be like watching over her. That's when she first does the graffiti on the school, second noteworthy event, graffiti, which then plays into the third time we see him when he does the graffiti. It's just like he was a fringe character, but every time he appeared, some big theme happened in the book.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I felt like he was also sort of a mirror for Vincent. Mm. Like, sort of, you know, this is how bad things could be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he was just, like, a constant reminder. And maybe it was because she was beautiful. She was able to just coast through life, pretty much. And he wasn't. Like, I think of him as, like, this creepy, weird dude. Because, ultimately, they had the same father and they had the same opportunities, you would have thought. But I just feel like when it came to Paul, like, and we didn't get so much of like Vincent's inner monologue, you know, and how she was thinking and feeling. Like, she lived with Alcatus for so long as just, you know, his fake wife, like really one friend, but just completely to herself, like keeping herself busy swimming. But like, what about her inner like happiness? It didn't seem like she was so concerned with any of that. She just wanted not to worry.
Yeah. It was most interesting when, like, we viewed her through the eyes of others, when they were like, she's beautiful, she can adapt, she's a chameleon, like, and you get snippets of her dialogue with his investor friends, and you're like, oh, she's crushing it, but I don't even get this when she's talking to me.
Right.
100%.
Yeah, like, I don't see that person that they're seeing, because, like, her inner, monologue has nothing to do with, like, the way she's acting.
Yeah.
I totally agree. But I think that's a great point of how you view yourself versus how the world sees you. And you're always like, you don't see like how fabulous you are.
Oh my God. Not to get off track.
And you're your own harshest critic.
But I'm in the middle of reading this other book. And it's the whole point of this main character doesn't know how fabulous she is. And it's freaking infuriating.
What book are you reading?
Another Renee Carlino book on my second one of the week. So
I feel like Vincent was inherently just, like, predisposed to feel lesser than because her father, like, the way that she came about was, like, through an indiscretion of, like, her father leaving Paul's mother to have Vincent. And, like, I feel like there was just, like, she always knew that there was this lingering animosity in the household about it. So I feel like that's going to mess anyone up long term.
Right. But I feel like in that situation, Vincent got the better end of the stick because she grew up with like two parents and in a normal, stable household, whereas Paul didn't because he was the one that got left behind when the father left.
Totally. Yeah, but maybe she felt guilt about the end of like the structure that ended up being their life.
That's true.
And then her mom drowned, so she had that over Paul.
And we never really got a clear answer on, like, what really happened there.
So I think that's what informed Vincent's incongruity throughout the whole book. Like, she didn't know either. They said she drowned, but she was tortured by the fact, like, was it suicide? Did she really drown? She knew how to swim, and then that's why she was obsessed with swimming in the pool, in the infinity pool at night. Like, she just needed answers, and I feel like her whole life, she was searching for, like, an identity. Like, she worked on the ship, because her mom used to work on the ship. Like, she was just trying to gather as much info about her mother as possible. So it was interesting that the very, very last scene when she dies, she sees her mom and is told that she actually did drown and would have never just left her on her own. So she like finally got that peace.
That's that shit that makes this a good book that like I'm just not sophisticated enough to pick up on, but like those things exist and therefore it's a literary wonder.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that because it's like I'm proud to say I am too stupid for this book, which is why I didn't like it. because I like those basic ass bitch stories and those make me happy. But when this, it's like, you're telling me things that I didn't know because I didn't pick up on it. And like, I read books to escape and enjoy, not to like, I don't know, better myself.
No, this was a good challenge. Like, now you're seeing the pieces, and like, if you were to reread it, I feel like you'd be able to see so many more themes. And
you couldn't little pay me, you couldn't pay me to reread this book.
It's also like, you don't, everyone is so intent to find the symbolism. What does this mean? X equals Y. But it's not even about that. It's just like enjoying the book for the book's sake. Like, I feel like that once you put all that pressure on yourself to be like, this is water, what does it mean? Then you rid yourself of any enjoyment. Like, you can't approach a book that way.
That's true.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I feel like even when I was reading it, even though we knew that ultimately Alcatis was going to be a Ponzi schemer, I felt like I was still waiting for something to happen and just like waiting for, you know, maybe I thought it was a thriller where there was just going to be like this twist, but instead it was just a story being told. And I think when you go in with those expectations, you're always going to be let down. And this book was really written for you to just like, just to enjoy.
Yeah, agreed.
Nice. Okay, so some more themes that we have are fantasy versus delusion. I think this is an important one because the element of ghosts, and I hate to call them ghosts because then it makes this sound like a spooky, scary book. And I didn't see them as ghosts. I saw them as like, this is what a person's seeing. Or you could see a human being and think that they look like someone else. You know, you see what you want to see. So what did you think about fantasy versus delusion in the novel, Dana?
I agree with that. Like, there were many levels to the ghosts. You could say like, oh, he's seeing a dead person, which the best argument for that one would be in jail, Jonathan would see them and you first think they're just figments of his imagination. But then like, he only sees Olivia after she dies, which he gets confirmation for. Vincent after
that
she dies.
That tripped me up too. Like the night that Vincent died and Paul sees her, it's like he only sees her now because she's dead, which is kind of ghosty.
That's where it's getting a little ghosty too literal. Vibes. You're like, oh, you're seeing a real ghost. But that like is on its most literal level. I think in general, the ghosts were probably just a coping mechanism, as we discussed, for the guilt. Like she sees her mom in the crowd because she feels guilty that she drowned and she didn't know. He sees Charlie in the crowd because he feels guilty that he killed him. Like, I think ghosts were just their own manifestations of their own guilt.
Me too. Like, I don't think it was an actual ghost. Like, we wouldn't have seen them. Like, yeah. It was in their head.
The people in the jail didn't see them.
Right. Yeah. So, it was just in their head.
Could be.
I think it was definitely a manifestation of guilt.
No, that's what I didn't get. Like, was I supposed to be suspending reality and were there ghosts walking around? Or this was in their head?
It's up to you, Counts.
I think it's in their head.
I think so too.
I just think it's weird that they all have these illusions of seeing ghosts or all experience guilt manifested into visions of people they've slighted. It's like, I get one person having that type of situation, but like all of them.
Also, I just have one thing to say that's completely off topic. It really bothered me that her name was Vincent.
Oh,
why?
Oh my God, I don't know why, but because every time, like, we wouldn't hear about Vincent for a while, we'd be somewhere else in this story, and then we'd go back to Vincent, and I was like, wait, I don't remember who this is. It's just, you know, like, the name just bothered me.
Like, you were irritated because it was a male's name?
I don't know if it was that, but, like, I just kept getting confused, because I couldn't, like, picture when I would read Vincent, like, oh, I'm thinking of Jonathan Alcatis' wife.
I didn't even realize Vincent is a man's name. I just kept thinking of St. Vincent, that singer. And I just thought it was an artsy name, and I liked that it was distinguished, because then when it came up later in the book, when Leon hears that Vincent has died at sea, he thinks for a second, I only know one other Vincent.
Well, I think that that's probably why they made the name very peculiar.
I liked the name, and it also made it so ambiguous, her personality. Like, I felt like I didn't know anything about her based on her name, which was why when we wound up hearing stuff about her from other people's perception, I was like, oh my God, she's fabulous, she's beautiful. Like, I don't know, she's just Vincent.
Right, totally. I feel like the reason why I just kind of reacted a little strongly there, Smitch, when you, like, said it, and I was like, get over it!
Do you know someone?
No, I don't know someone, but, like, in gathering intel about this book before I read it, I saw so much feedback about her name, and that's why people didn't like it. I was like, we have to go beyond that. Like, that is such a nitpicky thing to wrap your mind around and, like, get angsty about. Like, we are adults here. Like, we have to be okay with different types of names and that they're not going to be the norm. But, like,
oh, I mean, that's not the reason I didn't like the book. It was just an anecdote.
Okay, but, like, I didn't know where you were going to take it. So, like, I'm sorry, Snitch.
No, it's okay. But I'm also glad to know, like, I'm not alone.
Yeah. I feel like I, like, in the beginning noted that it was a weird name for a girl. And by the end, I was just completely used to that being her name after reading 500 pages. And, like, I don't know, that might have been reflective of how when they found themselves in a new weird situation, it felt foreign. And then after a while, like, living in the kingdom of money became natural. Like, basically anything that you do for any extended amount of time, you get used to. That's probably a stretch, but, like, maybe that had to do with her name being different.
Perhaps. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, last theme I want to touch on is the notion of crisis versus survival. I feel like survival was very prevalent, even in terms of, you know, the Ponzi scheme and the greed, and obviously you don't need to steal money in order to survive, but, like, everyone was just kind of looking out for number one. I felt that survival instinct, most notably in Vincent and Paul, but then they went two completely different paths in terms of surviving.
I think that survival was inherent in every character and they all handled it differently and they were all running in a sense. Like, Vincent's mode of survival was to make the best of her situation, improve her circumstances, and fake marry a rich man. Paul's way of surviving was to become a music conductor. And then you had stranger ones like Walter, the caretaker of the hotel, survive by staying alone in the glass hotel. Like, you just had different means of surviving their situation and everyone handled it differently. But, like, ultimately, I think the thing that tied them together was a recreation of their lives, like reinventing themselves and running from something.
Yeah. And it also felt like none of them were actually living.
Yeah.
Because Vincent was living a fake life. I don't think she was getting any joy. Alcatus was just living this huge lie. Walter living alone in the forest. I'm sure it was a nice setting, but what else is there?
Yeah.
Paul was, I believe, the saddest character of them all. Oh, no. But then Leon won for the sad contest. I feel so sad for Leon and Marie. Like, I don't know what to...
No, that was like the embodiment of crisis and, like, barely survival.
Yeah.
But you know what? At least they had each other. And that's why I didn't feel as sorry for them as I did for some of the other people. They had true love. And we'll get to it in a little bit. This notion of, like, being anchored to this world. They didn't have children, so they didn't feel like they had those anchors. But I feel like I feel like all of these characters were without anchors. They were just ships floating through the sea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Vincent also had her camera. Like, that was a way she dealt with crisis. That was a big part of the book. She was filmed 5-minute intervals of just standstill scenes throughout the entire thing. And I feel like that camera was important because, one, it, like, captured memory. And time was so important to the novel, like, between the different time zones, between the different time areas, like, her camera served as the constant to capture all of it, even when we were confused. Like, that was kind of the anchor there. And it was also, like, the means through which Paul propelled himself to fame, and it was also the cause for her death, because she was trying to grab her camera when she fell over this ship. So, maybe not related necessarily to crisis, but I thought her camera in general was a motif that followed it in interesting ways.
I agree. Even when she was realizing that her life had no purpose or meaning as being Mrs. Fake Alcatus, she kind of justified it to herself by being like, well, I have my camera and I'm taking these videos. And so that could be my life's purpose. Like, the camera has always been, like, her crutch in order to just modify how she sees the world in order to, like, feel okay.
Yeah.
Great. Before we get into the DBQs, I need to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest is amazing. I've been using Daily Harvest for a while. The Redheads got their Daily Harvest. And how are you guys liking it?
Amazing. I'm so happy. I feel so honored to have gotten that package and that vanilla bean smoothie. I added some peanut butter to it and my life has been changed.
Amazing. Daily Harvest delivers delicious, clean food right to your door. It takes just a few minutes to prepare, and I never have to question if the food I'm eating is good for me. Everything stays fresh in your freezer until you're ready to enjoy it. You don't have to overthink any of your meals for the week. They have delicious options for any time of day: smoothies, soups, harvest bowls, flatbreads, and more. Daily Harvest never uses preservatives, added sugar, or artificial ingredients. They work directly with farms, and they freeze organic fruits and vegetables at peak ripeness to lock in nutrients and taste. I personally love the Daily Harvest soups. I feel like it's so hard to get good soup at home, and theirs has everything that I'm looking for, and I'm just a big, big fan of Daily Harvest. So go to dailyharvest.com and enter promo code REDHEAD to get $25 off your first box. That's promo code REDHEAD for $25 off your first box at dailyharvest.com. Dailyharvest.com, promo code REDHEAD. As you know, we spell it READHEAD. Okay, let's get into the questions. So I think one of the biggest things that happens in the story is a message appears on the window of the hotel where Vincent is working. It says, "Why don't you swallow broken glass?" What are your thoughts on this message written on the window? The characters were so taken aback by it when it happened. Were you as taken aback? What did you think when you first read it? Bex?
I literally just didn't understand why everyone made such a big deal out of it.
Same.
I was like, we're fine. Everyone's okay. No one got hurt. Like, you had a moment of vandalism. We can move past it. And then to see that, like, Vincent's life was forever changed by it. And, like, all of these deep next steps, I was like, we have to move forward here, people. I mean, I understood that, like, there was sentiment associated with Alcatus's wife dropping the broken glass and Ella's glass. Like, that was like such a moment of realization. But, like, I still don't understand why Vincent was so triggered by it. So, like, Dana, looking at you, Mrs. I have an English degree.
Well, I think that Vincent was triggered by it because she did it first. She did it in high school.
Oh, no. This is, I want to take a shot at it, and then we'll let Dana give us the answer.
Jax,
I don't have the answer.
I think Vincent was so triggered by it because she knew Paul did it. And up until that point, Vincent and Paul kind of maybe thought that Vincent's mother died by suicide, that she went out into the water and that she killed herself that way. So if Paul knew that Vincent's mother had committed suicide and he wrote that message maybe to her, she's like, what the fuck are you writing? Why would you write that to me when, like, she has, you know, some personal association to that message?
I love that. That's so good. I never thought about it from the viewpoint of Vincent looking at it, knowing Paul did it, and be like, what are you trying to tell me?
Right, because she said she knew that Paul did it.
Yeah, she had to have known, like, who else is writing an acid when she knows that he knows that she did that when she was in high school. Like, she knows it was him. We just, at that point in the book, we weren't sure if it was Vincent or Paul. But yeah. Later, yes, learning it, then that's an interesting inflection point to be like, oh, she then obviously knew it was him, and what was her takeaway? I agree with that.
What was your answer going to be, Dana?
I was just going to, one, say how excited I was to put the dots together once we got to the scene in the restaurant where she drops it in, because that's when you realize for the first time that it was definitely Paul, because you put together, like, oh, she probably went there and told him, etc. But I wasn't so fixated on, like, I mean, I agree, I thought that it was a bit of an overreaction on the hotel staff to be so slighted. I'm more so focused on the fact of, like, what glass is and why that's meaningful, and it kind of just lent itself to the, like, the fragility of the book in general and all the characters and how if you don't handle life with care, it can break in an instant. And then it evoked imagery of, like, the title, which was the Glass Hotel. So it was just this reverberation of glass. And when you think of the Glass Hotel, it was described as something, as you said, Jackie, outside of time and space. And with a whole novel dedicated so intensely to time and space, between, like, time fluctuating and space being taken up by different characters, to be outside of that, I feel like, is rewarded only to the reader, really, because we are the only ones viewing it from an omniscient perspective. And, like, it lent itself for how do we view the book. Like, it may be a stretch, but I was more of just, like, glass killing you, glass hotel. How does glass as a theme weave itself between all of these characters and us as the reader?
I feel like another glass association is, like, the transparency of it, like, you can see, yeah, through it. And I feel like it has, like, to do with, like, it being solid, it being fluid. And I feel like there was a good tie into things not being as solid as they seem, which, like, I feel like was a theme throughout the entire book. Like, oh, you don't actually have a thriving business. Like, this is a Ponzi scheme. Like, I guess it's not as solid as we think. And, yeah. I mean, we see it pop throughout.
Yeah. And glass is just, like, a good image. Like, as you said, right, glass evokes, like, transparency. Like, you can see through something. And I feel like Vincent had that gift of seeing through people. Like, when she describes herself on the yacht with Olivia and Jonathan in their final days, she notes how Olivia's trying too hard. And that's not something that, like, everyone can pick up on. That's, like, a perceptiveness that you can see through someone only if you have the gift of it, which Vincent did.
That really stuck with me. Yeah. I highlighted that. I was like, I just never want to be that woman that's, like, obviously trying too hard.
I know. It's I, like, with am me that too. Woman. It sucks.
No, no, I don't think you are at all.
Not at all.
And also because Olivia, like, when we were first introduced to her and she's explaining how she was when she was younger and she was just so above people and she was just rude. And so to hear someone, like, judge her afterwards, it just felt kind of nice.
Yeah, I agreed. And it was such a line you could miss. It's, like, was such a quick thing. But it's interesting that it stood out to all of us as, like, ooh, cringe. Like, she is trying too hard and it's being noticed. And even though this is one line in a book of many lines, it stuck with us.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Olivia just, like, wanted to be, or thought she was, everything of the sort. And it just turns out that, like, she wasn't.
Yes. I interpret it as, like, there was a life that, like, she was so close to having. She, like, almost crossed the threshold into becoming a successful artist and, like, missed the boat. And then afterwards was just, like, picking up straws. But, like, does have this interaction with a social circle that's so flashy that she's, like, okay, like, I need to, like, make it look like I can fit in. And, like, here's what I think it looks like to do that, even though, like, we all see that she just, like, went a few steps too far.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like Olivia was, if anything, like, her purpose was to be a vessel into Jonathan's memory of his brother. Like, we didn't really hear about his brother that much as outside of Olivia because she drew the picture for him. And that was one of the lines that stuck with me the most out of everything in the book, when he's in jail and he's being told by his cellmate that if you access a memory too frequently, you're actually changing the content of the memory. And that, to me, was, like, the most poignant part of the entire book, because it's just an interesting concept. So, like, accessing his real memories were now becoming tainted, coupled with his counter-life memories that weren't real. It's just memory as a theme was very prevalent.
Yeah.
Is that true, by the way?
I agree. That shook me. I don't know, because sometimes I do think it's true. The more, like, you think about something, then you start, like, adding sort of little embellishments. But I think when you remember a memory for the first time, it feels so far away and, like, you don't know anything about it. And I feel like the more you think about it, and that's actually a sad thing to think about, like, think about people who have passed away, like, so the more you think about them, like, the more you're sort of tarnishing their actual memory of who they were and adding your own shit to it.
Yeah.
Very sad. Okay, next question. Vincent's brother, Paul, we must discuss Paul, was in and out of her life. What do you think he brought to the table, Dana?
I mean, I mentioned earlier how I thought he came at important moments to highlight things that then ended up being important in the book. Just one thing I loved about Paul was the beginning when he appears, his monologue is kind of interspersed with, like, confessional dialogue that you're confused about.
Yeah.
You realize it's in the future, but it's your first interaction with this past, present, future, so you're confused. And then one of the very last scenes in the novel is when he sees Vincent's ghost and he says something along the lines of, I was just talking about you in my therapy session. And you're reminded that that's likely the confessional dialogue from the first scene when he's talking to a therapist. So it all comes full circle. And I just feel like he was a foil to promote such imagery, but it also, like, tied into this circular structure of the book where it the beginning of the book is the ending. And you just get taken through an entire life of experiences that starts in the same place that it ends. And Paul is a big part of that.
Yeah. Okay. This next question is probably one of the biggest questions we'll ask. One of the themes of the book produced by Oscar, he says, it's possible to both know and not know something. This is carried through not just the Ponzi scheme, but in other aspects of the novel as well. Do you think this is possible to know and not know?
I think it's, like, you know, yet you're in denial, so you don't actually know. It's, like, you don't want to give in to the thought of what it could be, but, like, you know, but, like, you don't actually know.
Yeah, I think that this is a real thing. Like, you know, like, if someone were to say it to you, it wouldn't be a complete shock, but you don't have the details. Therefore, you can convince yourself that if you needed to prove that it wasn't true, you could.
It's like having...
You're just, like, trying not to be culpable.
Yeah, it's like having plausible deniability because you don't actually know, but you know.
Yeah, I feel like the scene that best illustrates that, I mean, there's a lot where they, I mean, the funniest is when they're all in the comments room and there was an employee who genuinely seemed like he didn't know, but when Vincent was out to dinner with Lenny Xavier, the, like, LA investor, music producer, who was the biggest one and who knew about the Ponzi scheme, he started alluding to it a little bit to Vincent in the conversation, talking about the investment strategy and how he agrees with it, and she perks up because she notices a shift in Jonathan's attitude because he starts interjecting and telling him not to bore the ladies with investment talk, and she picks up on that energy. So, like, that example right there is one where she kind of knows, but she also doesn't know. Like, she doesn't push on it.
Yes, but it's like, that is a weird behavior from her husband, but that doesn't mean my husband is running a multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme.
No.
So she knows, like, something's amiss, but who could guess what it was?
Right. Ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss. Truly. Okay, now I want to get to the redhead questions because we got so many good ones and this podcast is for you guys. And so I want to make sure we're touching on things that are important to you. Now, we got one email from a reader that said, my first thought / question after I finished this book was, Dana, can you please explain this to me? So, Dana, can you please explain this book to this reader? I feel like you've done a good job of explaining why it was written in certain ways, but ultimately, and I don't want to skip ahead to the moral of the story, but just, like, what can you explain this book to someone who maybe even started it and didn't finish it?
I think, I mean, I don't want to say it's not a good question, it's a great question, but inherent in the question is the flaw of looking for meaning and trying to find a moral and trying to put together pieces of a book that, like, as I mentioned earlier, you just have to enjoy for the experience of reading. Like, it's not as if A, B, C happened, so we got D as a result. It's like, no, you know what happened. You read the story. Like, yes, there are subplots that you can characteristically define as during this time period from 1999 to 2000, she was in the kingdom of money. And before that, she worked in a hotel. Like, yeah, you can, it's still a linear story in some ways. But for the most part, there's no deeper meaning besides just enjoying the book for the way it's written and how it is and the literary prose and all the beauty that goes along with it. But, like, I just think that people are too hard on themselves with torturing on trying to find a meaning and trying to figure out what the book is about when you know what it's about because you read it, and that's really all you have to take out of it, just the story. Yeah. And all the elements that make it the book.
I really like that. I think people are being a little hard on themselves. I feel like I was hard on myself, like, just feeling stupid, like, oh, there's this big mystery that I didn't get, but I read the book and I enjoyed it, therefore I accomplished the mission of the author.
Yeah, I read the book and I didn't enjoy it, yet I accomplished the mission of the author.
Yeah.
I read the book and I enjoyed it, and I accomplished the mission of the redheads, which is to get together and talk about this damn book.
Okay. Next question, a little bit more specific. On page 156, Vincent is overwhelmed by this feeling she gets before going on the subway. Quote, she was overcome by the certainty that if she went into the subway, she would die. She knew it as clearly as she knew her own name. That's interesting, focusing on the name, though. Anyways, the question is, what do you think of this? Do you lean towards the arguably more logical explanation that it was an anxiety attack, or do you think that there is a case to be made for the more otherworldly side of it, that maybe something awful would have happened? Maybe it actually could have been a premonition. One of the things this reader loved about this book was how trippy it was in terms of never truly letting the reader know what should and shouldn't be taken at face value. And I wasn't sure what we were supposed to make of that moment. Things that seem impossible do happen a lot in this book, so I was wondering what your thoughts were. That's a great question. Snitch?
That actually is a good question. I mean, I feel like I would have liked to have maybe, like, later on heard about someone reading the news about, like, a crazy stabbing in a subway station, you know? So, like, we could know whether or not this was legitimate or not. But I do think that, like, maybe it was an anxiety attack, but I don't think it was completely unfounded in the sense of, like, sometimes you just have, like, a gut instinct that, like, something is not right and something is wrong, and, like, you just turn away. And, like, she did the right thing. Like, it's easier to say, like, oh, it's fine, like, she was freaking out, but, like, something could have happened. Like, you don't know, and maybe that was just her gut telling her, like, get the fuck out.
Also, I feel like it was nice to see that more emotive side of Vincent. I feel like we don't normally get a glimpse into her inner thoughts. And I feel like there she was panicked and she was overwhelmed and she was just feeling all the feels. And I thought about that passage a lot. I think this is a great question because I remember thinking, I was like, what ended up coming of that? Like, what was the deal there? But I did think that about a lot of passages throughout the book, which brings me back to Dana's point that it's like, it doesn't always have to make sense for things to be impactful long-term.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, I think the supernatural intruded in this book in just a different way than we were used to in Nothing to See Here, where it was such an obvious stark contrast, like very realistic story, but there's this children who spark on fire. Like those are very disconnected. Here it was more interwoven into the plot. It's like there's ghosts, but they could just be manifestations of your guilt, but there's a real ghost. Like it was much more fluid, and I kind of liked that because it didn't leave you imagining like, okay, fire children is just the one element here that's supernatural. It was kind of like in the subtext of every line.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, next question. For this reader, one of the biggest themes in the book was this idea of a homecoming or always coming to / back to someone. There's a character, there's a chapter called I Always Come to You. The words are lyrics in Anika's song. Lenny tells Vincent and Jonathan over dinner, she'll come back to me, referring to Anika. And then on page 88, Vincent thinks about her relationship with Jonathan. Quote, when he beckoned, she would come to him. The comings and goings are hard enough to keep track of between the physical people and the ghosts. But do you think this motif applied to Vincent and her mom, a relationship which we never got to read about per se, but which is arguably one of those most powerful relationships in the book? I felt like Vincent returning to her mom closed the loop on these words, I'll come to you, which were whispered in a steady reverberation throughout the book. And for me, they never really hit their mark. Like Anika never returns to Lenny and Vincent at the end of the day does not come. And Vincent, sorry. Like Anika never returns to Lenny and Vincent at the end of the day does not come when Jonathan beckons until the very end when it seems like this was the relationship those words were in reference to all along. I thought it was powerful. Maybe I'm being cheesy and stupid though, so I would love to hear your thoughts and whether or not you even thought this was a theme / whether it applies to Vincent and her mom / how you feel about Vincent and her mom in general. Wow, that I completely agree with this reader that was like an overall theme that I just totally fucking
missed. Me too. Me too.
Does this reader want to join the Redheads?
Do you want a job?
You can take mine.
No, totally, because I feel like everything with this book was intentional, even the things that were unintentional. And sometimes I feel like this when I watch shows or movies, like you see something that happens and it's like, oh, we didn't need to see that. That means that something's going to happen with that thing. But this book had some stuff where it was like, no, she's just letting you know she didn't take the subway because she was having anxiety. So I think ultimately the lyrics, like Anika's lyrics, were intentional, and that maybe that is an overarching message of this book, and that it was the story of a mother and daughter coming back together because ultimately they both end up in the sea.
Yeah, and the fact that she's honing in on a lyric I think is important because the whole book is kind of this lyric music, has this musicality to it. Like another line that gets repeated a lot is sweep me up. It's in the beginning, mm-hmm. Sweep me up. It's what she writes on the graffiti and acid at school. It's the last line of the book when she's dying and she thinks sweep me up. And it has that same like trope lyric vibe to it. And I think it just speaks to the general formula of the book of how it's just written so beautifully and has this musicality, not only in actual lyrics like this reader highlights, but also just in other tropes that are repeated throughout the book.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Why do you think there was such a heavy focus on Paul and Baltica at the beginning? Like, I know it circled back to Anika for a second with the music producer later, but why so much focus on Paul and the band and the guy Charlie's OD?
Well, I think we needed to know about the OD because, like, I just think that's something we should know, that he, like, killed someone, and that could really help us understand his spiral and why he ended up at the hotel and all the things like that. So it seems like a backstory. Why we had to know about Anika and Baltica, don't know.
But that's one of those things that Anika thing where it's like when she came back into the picture with Lenny, I was like, oh my God, the cover's going to be blown. Like, this is it. And then that didn't happen. So it was intentional it was intentionally unintentional. It's just like these people came in and out of each other's lives. It's a lot about coincidence, but just because she's back in the picture doesn't mean it's all going to come out. It just like is an interesting factoid. And I like that the author did that, that not everything had to like A plus B equals C and then D.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I don't necessarily like it, but I appreciate it because like I always try to make sense of things. However, I did think that I expected Paul, Baltica, Anika, like I expected that to take the tone of the book and like be the main plot. So when we kept going away from that and like went the direction of Vincent, I like in my head, I was like, okay, like when's Paul gonna come back? Like what's the deal with this band? Like, so I mean, it just threw me off course for a little.
But you know what's so interesting is at the end when he's talking to Ella, and he mentions that he used to be in Baltica, which was so strange. It just goes to show how much that one event, like that was just one night of his life that he heard them perform, like how much it affected the rest of his life.
I mean, because he killed someone.
Something to think about with the whole thing with when you think about something too much, you change the memory. Maybe he thinks about Baltica way too much that he changed the memory that he was in it.
That's interesting.
That's a good point.
Yeah, he said he couldn't write a song that was not influenced by that genre of music.
Yeah. Also, I would like for us to maybe talk about that night with Ella. That was so crazy. And, like, he was just forcing himself to stay out all night with her. And, like, we thought that something was going to come of it. And, like, then nothing ever did. And I was like, go to sleep. Go to sleep!
Right, but it did. Something did come of it in the sense of, like, that's how he got, like, so fucked up that he was seeing Vincent.
Yeah.
I feel like we were just getting pop quizzes throughout the whole book. Like, now I am reintroducing Anika during this dinner conversation. Do you guys remember her? Like, it was just like a test of our readership.
Yeah, I feel like now, if I have to pick a moral of the story, it's just that it's a small world.
Literally.
Yes. Like, I love that.
You know, like, it's just so many coincidences. Like, Ella sees Paul and Anika and Vincent and Lenny. Like, it just, everything's coincidental and it's a small world. Okay, next up, I want to talk about a character who hasn't gotten a lot of love yet. But this reader asks, what were your thoughts on how the author dealt with Leon Prevant at the end of the book, more specifically that he just up and fled from his mortgage without any repercussions? I thought up until this point, the author did a good job wrapping up all the characters' post-Ponzi life, and I see where she was going with this, but I also didn't think it made sense. Leon and his wife would 100% be in the IRS and all those people's radars. Do you think there could have been a counter ending with Leon, another way she could have made his life go? I say counter because of the obvious use of counter life in the whole book. To me, this was one of the things that actually made sense. Like, this was 2008, there's a housing crisis. This man and his wife lost all of their money. All they have is an RV, and now they're going to live in the shadows. Like, the way that they felt when they left that house and that mortgage and just that weight was one of, like, the things that made the most sense to me in the book, logistically.
I just feel like it was realistic. I mean, I wasn't there losing my house at that time, so, like, maybe it was a little more complicated than I'm making it out, but I think that that's, like, not something that I'm gonna lose sleep over trying to make sense of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they also, like, bring back the theme during that Leon part of the book of can you both know and not know? Because he's given another opportunity after he's already exiled into poverty to go into the investigation. He gets that tidbit of information that her boyfriend may have been the one to push her off because he has a history of violence. And the second that he's shushed with the opportunity of getting another job there, he doesn't say anything. So it kind of just, like, shows, can you learn from your mistakes? Does it matter? Does greed always outweigh morality? He just gives us, like, one last glimpse of even when you fall and you have that time to reflect on everything you did wrong, you can still make the wrong decision in the future.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you automatically will do everything differently.
Right.
Yeah, but good thing that he didn't lean on his morality because he would have been wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Next question. This book was a little frustrating to me. Why do you think the author decided to give away most of the ending, or I guess gave away key events of the story throughout the book? For example, when they said Jonathan died in prison, and in the story he hadn't even gone to prison, and we had no idea why. It felt like I knew what was going to happen before it happened, and that was very frustrating. I like books that the ending is like, whoa, didn't see that coming. What do the redheads think?
I agree with that. Like, I know that this isn't supposed to be your quintessential book, like, blah, 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 you guys have said it 100 times, whatever. But
damn, Satchler.
Like, it ruined the, it spoils the ending. And it's like, that would have been a good ending or just like moment in the book that we hadn't had expected and we would have been shocked. So then, like, knowing that he was going to jail and you were just, it was like an impending wait for all of this to go down. So it's like, why am I even bothering to read all of this when I know it's no longer relevant?
That's so funny. Yeah. I didn't even pick up on the fact that Jonathan was in jail at the beginning of the book, or I didn't get a sense that he was in the process of being, bringing down, like, a Ponzi scheme. I just, until it was announced to me, like,
they literally said
he died in jail. They said it once because Leon said he was talking to Jonathan and that he seemed like this wonderful guy, never the type of guy that you would think was going to die in jail.
Oh, you know, I do remember that.
That's easy to miss.
So though. Then you knew.
I thought the author could have held.
Oh, no, the author could have held out and made it like a more of a suspense, but she's telling the story, and sometimes, and this is based on, you know, something that happened in real life, and sometimes you know the end of the story before you even hear the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's frustration is rooted in not knowing, or this the lack of conventionality in the book structure, and it's just interesting how it exposes human nature of wanting to know and needing a linear structure and like wanting beginning, middle, and end. And I think that's why a lot of people didn't like the book, because it was just not what they were used to, and they wanted answers and they wanted clarity. So I think it just takes a suspension of what you know to like get into it, you know?
Yeah. Okay, another redhead question that we got is, someone wanted to talk about what a bitch Mirella was to Vincent post her fall. What did you think about the friendship between Vincent and Mirella? And then how did you feel about the way Mirella treated her when she went to the bar in Hell's Kitchen? Do you think that she even recognized
her? I think she did recognize her. And I think that we learned that Faisal killed himself because of what happened, because of Alcatis. So that might have been by then. So I don't blame her for not even speaking to Vincent, because her husband just killed himself because of what Vincent's quote-unquote husband did to him.
I completely agree. Like, ignoring her was the kindest thing she could have done, considering everything that Vincent's family did to
her.
I couldn't believe that she had the self-control to ignore. I was so impressed. I was like, damn, that is a bold-ass move to just, like, completely ice someone out. But,
yeah. Or it just goes back to what Mirella was saying in the beginning, which is that she now just the help are invisible to her.
Yeah.
Maybe she just didn't even register. Like, Vincent is just not even in her line of view.
That's definitely it. You nailed it.
Dana? What's the answer, Dana?
That's what I was going to say, that it just had it brought back how she doesn't see the help and now she can't see her because she's exactly what you said. That's what I took from it.
It's true. Wow. Step aside, D. We have a new wizard in town.
Woohoo! Okay, last redhead question. She wants to say, first, just wanted to say this was the best book I've read in the redhead so far. I was so impressed with how the author wove these intersecting stories together. I think deconstructing the narrative format really made it interesting. One of the themes in this book relates to ghosts / the afterlife / being haunted by past decisions. At the end of the book, she was crying, by the way, this reader, when Vincent sees her mother on the day she drowns, do you guys think her mother actually saw her? Was that the reason she drowned, maybe going out in the water to follow the vision of Vincent? I thought that was a cool and very emotional way to close that storyline, but I could see it being interpreted many ways. What do you think about that, Dana?
I love that. I mean, we originally glossed over the mother-daughter part of it, and then by the end of our analysis decided it might be the moral of the whole entire book. So I like that these redheads were picking up on it before we were. I think that's a really astute analysis.
I like that.
I also love that she thinks that this was the best book that we've read throughout the book club series, because everyone just has such different tastes, and I like that we are reaching a really broad spectrum of preferences. And I'll just say, when in the group I saw some people recommending books and also telling people not to read certain books, and I would just say that we should maybe stray from doing that, because you never know what people are going to love or hate, and you can potentially be keeping someone from something that would really land emotionally, physically, spiritually. Cautionary tales, you know?
That's actually
Yeah, I was looking for... That is good advice. I was looking for content for the Redheads Book Club Instagram, so I was on Pinterest just looking at, like, quotes about books. And I saw the one that was really poignant, I think, that relates back to this. It's like, the only thing that matters in a book is what the story means to you, you know? I mean, I'm paraphrasing, it was much more beautiful than that. But, like, that's really all that matters. Not what it meant to someone else, but, like, what you take from it. Like, how you are going to live your life differently based on what you read in this book. Like, what message you received.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I like that.
Yeah. I agree. I like that everyone has different tastes. I like that this is some people's least favorite book, and I love that it's some people's most favorite book. And I plan on continuing on this jagged path for my next book choice. So just stay tuned, ladies.
Side note, I loved the part in the book. I feel like everything was so literary and deep, but the one thing that was just straightforward was when Claire, the daughter, asked Vincent if she knew what a Ponzi scheme was, and she said yes. And she was like, oh my god, like, how do you know? You must have been involved. And she just responded saying, because I'm not a fucking idiot. Which was just, like, a refreshing line and an oasis of, like, glittery language to just be so straightforward like that.
No, totally. And, like, when we heard the scenario from Vincent's perspective, she said she sat down in the room, she put her bags down, and then they started to talk. And we didn't hear what was said. But then we heard it from Alcatus's point of view when he says, like, at the end of the day, Vincent actually wound up being, you know, more than he bargained for. And he tells us that story. And it's like, Vincent doesn't even, like, see that that's what makes her so great, is she's just smart and to the point and, like, with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And even when they're describing her, when they're doing the investigation, I don't remember the exact words, when they were like, this was a person who loved her life and her job, which is not how we ever knew her in the story. But when they were like, how could you not love a person like that? Like, she was so happy working on the ship. And it's like, Vincent never described herself that way. Yeah. I would have never known that's who she was.
Totally. It was funny when the reporter was like, how's Vincent? And he was like, off the record, this is embarrassing. Do you know where she is?
Yeah. No, she's a legit chameleon. Like, you'll see her when she wants you to.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the next segment of the book club, the moral of the story. We've sort of speculated along the way what we think the moral is. And obviously, it's a lot deeper than just, you know, some fables, fun, like, nice little quip. But I'm going to stick with mine, which is that it's a small world after
all. I'm going to stick with yours.
Ooh.
I'm going to go with things aren't as solid as they seem.
Nice.
I like that in terms of the glass part that we talked about.
And now, Dana, what was the moral of the story?
No, I really don't know. I took from it that it was just a nice meditation on, like, the human experience. It just, I don't know, there was no, like, moral that stood out to me, as we've had, obviously, in past books, like, man plans, God laughs. This was just the human condition and how everyone gets through life.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would agree with that. Okay, let's get into the... What?
I was like, I'm going to go with things aren't as solid as they seem.
Yeah, take from it what you will. I think the author would like that. Let's get into our next segment. So much fun. Switching gears, making it a little more pop culture-y. The Hollywood treatment. I actually think this book would do very well as a spooky little miniseries. And I wouldn't be surprised if one day, like, it's on our screen. So maybe we can make some casting recommendations. I want to hear who all of you guys think should play the four main characters. It's hard to even know who the main characters were. But the mainest character for me was Vincent. I feel like a lot of people could play her and do her justice. But ultimately, I chose Margot Robbie because I think she's so beautiful, obviously. But she has an edge to her where I could see her as a chef on a boat or living in a basement apartment in Vancouver.
Okay. I'm, like, totally opposite side. I chose Rooney Mara.
Ooh.
Love that snitch. I, in my head, had Rooney Mara throughout, and I forgot about it when I was actually answering this question, and I put Natalie Portman, which I feel like works.
It works. Dana?
I had Julia Garner.
Oh, she's a little young, but...
Yeah.
Well, she was what, like 23?
Oh,
yeah. But then I would assume the same person would play the the ship.
True.
Yeah, she would have to span like a lot of ages. But no, that's a good that's one, Dana. Okay, yes. Next up for Jonathan Alcatis, I'll go first. I had Victor Garber. I just love him as an actor. And Jonathan, like, was very charismatic and prominent. And until you found out he was running a Ponzi scheme, he just, like, seemed like a very significant man. And I think that Victor Garber is Daddy Warbucks, and that works for me.
I had, and this was before I even knew it was based off of him, I had Bernie Madoff.
But I think Jonathan was supposed to be kind of handsome. You know, he wasn't... Bernie Madoff was not...
I don't even know what Bernie Madoff looks like.
He's not cute, Kaz. Yeah. Bex?
I had Kevin Spacey because he's a criminal, and so is Jonathan.
Love it. Dana? Good.
I had Bernie Madoff, too, but my real one was Brad Pitt.
You know, it's not that far off, because I think you're meant to, like, fall in love with Alcatis a little bit, just like the whole world did, just forking over their money.
Yeah.
There you go.
For Paul, I had Jim Parsons, because I just had that dweeby guy from Big Bang Theory in my head, so I had to Google what his name was, and then it turned out it was Jim Parsons, and I just watched him in Hollywood. But the character that he played in Hollywood, I guess, like, Paul is just creepy to me.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one.
Thank you.
I did Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad, you know.
Oh, a little more handsome.
Yeah. I had Will Poulter, who is Kenny in We're the Millers.
Oh my god, that's really so funny. Good. Yeah.
That's a great one.
Thanks. I too got a creepy vibe from him, which is why I made him, and I have no idea this actor's name, but the kidnapper creepy dad in Ted that steals Ted.
Oh, oh my. Wow.
You went like full creep. That is so funny. Okay. I like that. Okay, and the last one that we cast was for Leon, the precious, sad little gem of Leon. I chose Russell Crowe because I was looking for a man age 60, and I think that Russell Crowe is, like, ambiguously sad sometimes, especially these days when they're, like, taking paparazzi photos of him and his belly in the airport.
Oh, bummer.
Have you guys seen those photos?
No.
He just looks like a man who's driving around the country in an RV.
Okay. For mine, I actually am pretty proud of this one. I did Sam Elliott.
Ooh, that's good. He's from
Star is Born,
Dana.
Oh, yes. That makes perfect sense.
He's a good, significant actor. Yeah. I like that.
That's a good one. I had Adam Sandler a la Hidden Gems because that was as sad as it gets in, like, a overall sense and also, like, in a vocational sense.
Understood.
I had Tom Hanks because he's one of five actors I know.
That's actually pretty good.
Okay.
Yes.
That's not the worst choice you can make.
Oh, I did well.
Okay. Right. Now it is time for the overall Redheads rating of The Glass Hotel. Becky?
I went with a 3.5. I really liked it, but I didn't feel like I understood everything enough for it to warrant a 4 for me. Like, a 4, like, I really want to be, like, speaking the language of this book. And, like, it's on me that it didn't get a 4.
So, yeah.
But I loved it. Jax, I thought it was a great pick. Thanks for taking us down a different path.
I rated this book a 4 because I recognize that it is a very good book. It's not a 5 for me because I didn't understand it enough to give it a 5. But I thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. Even though it was confusing and complex, I was able to read it in a day. I didn't want to put it down. I liked the characters and I felt it was a strong literary prose. And thus I gave it a 4. Snitch?
I'm going to go with a 2.3. And it would normally be just a 0 because I truly didn't enjoy this book, but it's a 2.3 because I'm appreciating the value of the book and how the way it was written and all the things that I missed. So I'm just giving it a rating in and of itself because I know that it had a lot to dig into, but I personally just didn't like it.
Okay, very fair. Dana?
I will give this a 4.5.
Wow, bringing up the average. Okay, it is time. The overall Redheads rating for The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel is 3.575.
I feel like that makes sense.
I feel like that's how together we would rate this book, which is how an average works. Dana, we got a question for you because one reader asked, they want to know how you rate books. She always sees that you rate things 4.8 or 3.4, very specific, and she's wondering what your rating process is.
That's so funny. I like have no means to that science. It's, I think, me being non-committal and like not wanting to give something too much or too little, so I settle on a random point decimal.
Yeah. Okay. That's very sweet of you. Okay. Wow. We are wrapping up The Glass Hotel. That was a very fun journey. Before we get into other books that we read in these past 2 weeks, I want to let you know that today's episode is also brought to you by Book of the Month. If you're looking for other books to read in addition to the Redheads books, check out Book of the Month. It is a fun book subscription that offers 5 new and early release books to choose from each month. Their editorial team chooses the books, vetting them from hundreds each month. Members choose the book they want and can add on up to 2 additional books if they want. Book of the Month is commitment free. You can skip any month you want as many times as you want. It's a great way to branch out into new genres or styles. Many members say they wouldn't have tried something new if it weren't for the featured books. They support up and coming authors, especially debut writers, and highlight new and diverse backgrounds. Your first month's book with Book of the Month is just $9.99 with code Book Club. So I've gotten Book of the Month before. I just got one of the books from their new choices called Happy and You Know It by Laura Hankin.
I got it too. From Book of the Month.
You did?
Yeah, Happy and You Know It by Laura Hankin.
I'm so excited to read it. It sounds so up my alley. That's what I'll be reading for the next 2 weeks. So I would never have known about it without Book of the Month. I think Book of the Month is a great program if you're always looking for new and diverse suggestions. They pretty much do all the research for you, and then they choose 5 really different books from one another. And I think they have a great recommendation system. So if you want to try Book of the Month, use code BOOKCLUB to get your first month's book for just $9.99. Okay, with that said, what other books did people read? I'm going to go first because I did not read anything else.
Okay.
Whoa,
I read
Breaking the Mold.
They're speechless.
I read 1.5 books because I'm halfway through one right now, but I read Swear on This Life by Renee Carlino, and it was seriously, like, fantastic. I would give it a 4.5, not a 5, mainly just because it was an easy read, so I feel like some people who have more depth, like, would hate that I gave it a 5. But it was just so good, like such a sad story, but like in a good way. And I just loved it. And now I'm reading Wish You Were Here by Renee Carlino. And by the time Jackie probably puts up this episode, I'll have finished it. But at this very point in time, I'm giving it like a 3.9.
Nice. Bex?
I finally read Daisy Jones and the Six, which I'm so excited to announce because Jax has been encouraging me ever so slightly but also aggressively to read this book, and I'm so glad I did because it was amazing. I love classic rock, so like it really like brought me back to my days of like being a total groupie of like all my favorite bands from back then. And I would give it a 4. I think I fell victim again to falling for the hype. Like, I let the hype get the best of me. And so, like, I was expecting, like, my life to be forever changed, which, like, I'm not saying it wasn't, but, like, I'm not saying it was. So that's where I'm at.
Expectations are really, like, everything. That's why I love reading books completely blindly. Like, Dana will give me a suggestion or something. I don't even read the back. I just read the book. And it's such a nice way to read. Dana, what did you read?
I read 2 really, really good books. The first is The Girl with the Louding Voice by Abi Dare. I would give it a 4.8. It was fantastic. It's an incredible story. And the second book I read is American Dirt by Janine Cummins. I would give it a 4.6. I really liked it. It was very good.
Nice. Okay, you know what? I'm actually really grateful for the Redheads this month because I've been watching a lot of TV. And I had to read The Glass Hotel, like, for the book club. Otherwise, I would not have read a book in a while. And now, after reading that book, I'm like, wait, I want to read another book and another book. And it just got me back into reading, whereas I think I would have fell off for a while if it wasn't for the book club. So I'm just loving the club, and I'm so glad you guys are a part of it. And we're just chugging along. So you guys can now get excited for the next book that I have chosen. We will drop our next episode, on the first Thursday of June. The book I have chosen is Codename Helene by Arielle Lawhin. It is a historical fiction book, a little World War II action. I read some really good reviews about it. Dana had heard good things. And so other than that, I don't want to know much more about it. And I think it will be great for us to get into a new genre. I know that's Becky's favorite genre. So like, I'm hoping to appeal to the masses.
Totally. I can't wait to read it.
I'm so grateful for the Redheads because I would have never read The Glass Hotel with as much attention otherwise, and then I feel like if you don't pay full attention, you miss everything. So this club made me really focus in a way I don't know if I otherwise would have.
Yeah, because everyone has high expectations for you, Dana.
And it's just like, yeah. You don't read the book the same way when you don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it puts a lot of pressure on the way that you read it because you feel like you have to remember everything and you can't enjoy it as much. But then other times you wind up remembering things because you need to. Otherwise, you might have not soaked in everything that you needed to. So overall, I'm loving this experience. I think being in this book club has just been great for us during the quarantine and great for so many of the members of our community. And I'm loving the community. So if you are enjoying this, please follow us on Instagram at The Redheads. Please leave us a nice podcast review in the podcast store, maybe 5 stars, you know, just that would be sweet. And thank you for being a member of The Redheads. I'm going to let everyone go. We've been recording for so long.
I'm fucking starving.
Bye, guys. Love you.
Love you guys.
Love you.